You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to say our love.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Ice Cold Takes podcast. I am your host, Joey DiMeglio, and the New York Rangers completed the trifecta on Monday, winning the Metropolitan Division, clinching first place in the Eastern Conference, and the President's Trophy. A first-round matchup with the Washington Capitals awaits this weekend. We still don't know the schedule yet. Joining me today is a special guest. He has the most knowledge of the Rangers out of any New York sports radio personality. It's Don LaGreca. Don, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Well, it's my pleasure, man. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. I saw you called some games for the Knicks this year on the radio, right?
Yeah, it was fun.
That's, taking a page out of Kenny Albert's book there.
It was a lot of fun. I had a couple of really good games, that the big win against the Heat. I guess the best compliment I got was somebody felt like I called a basketball game like a hockey game. So I took that as a compliment.
Yeah, no, it actually sounded very similar to how you call hockey. Like you kept the same excitement in your voice, which is great. I love that. Next, I don't know. SNY's got to have you do like a spring training game. I don't know if they've done that ever before. You got to call some baseball, though.
Well, I got to call some about 3 years ago. I did call a spring training game with Michael and Peter for a few innings for a Yankee game. So I got that, which is nice.
Oh, that must have been a lot of fun.
It was really cool.
Peter Rosenberg was with you?
Yes.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah, I wish I would have seen
very,
that.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, that would have been
great. They haven't asked us back, so I'm going to blame him.
I'll hold you to it. No steppage from Dave Maloney this year. I was waiting for another good story. I know last time we talked on the show, you talked a lot about like your relationship with Dave. Mm-hmm. Not really anything this year, but you guys again remain tight. Good relationship on the broadcast. I love it. But you didn't call too many Rangers games this year. Was there a reason for that? Or,
well, just there was a lot going on with Ed going through his thing, so I was given some more Knicks, so things got moved around a bit. But I still did every pre and post, and I still did 20 games. We'll see what the playoff schedule has in store, but it's all good.
Mm-hmm. So there's is there a chance like we hear you call more Rangers games on the radio in like the near future?
No, it could be in the first round. I mean, when MSG's done after the first round, then Sam moves in to back up Kenny, and rightly so, because then Sam won't have any television obligations. So We'll see what opens up here in round one against Washington.
Mm-hmm. Would TV ever be an option for you?
I mean, I've always been a radio guy, but I always keep my options open. I would love to do it.
Gotcha. But yeah, that would.
Radio is more descriptive, so. But I've got a face for radio, so that might play a role in my future.
But let's get into like how the Rangers did this season. Going into it, did you ever think that this would happen, that this kind of regular season franchise record for wins in a season? Did you ever think that would happen this year?
No, well, I didn't have expectations that were like as specific as winning the President's Trophy, but my expectations were pretty high, based on Peter Laviolette being the coach and his immediate impact that he had with the Islanders, Carolina, Philadelphia, and Nashville. Not so much with Washington, but, you know, there were extenuating circumstances. There were a lot of injuries that I think hurt him having success in Washington. But, You looked early on when he took over the Islanders, the impact he had there, a team that never went to the playoffs and became a perennial playoff team, the Cup in Carolina, Stanley Cup Finals in Philadelphia and Nashville. So I knew that he was the right guy to get the most out of this team. And I knew they would finally have a system and a way of playing that was going to be more conducive to winning. But, you know, I had predicted at the beginning of the season that Carolina would win the division and win the Cup. So I thought the Rangers would be better, but I didn't know that they would win the division and be this good. Pleasantly surprised, but I knew that Peter was going to have an impact on making this team better.
He seems like he's carved out roles for guys like Alexi Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko, where before, like, it just seemed like they were plug-and-place guys. Let's just, you know, maybe we put him in the top six. Gerard Gallant didn't really do too much of that with Lafreniere. I mean, there were stretches here and there, maybe like 10, 15 game stretches, but nothing like this. Like, it would be an entire season on the third line, pretty much, well, maybe 60 games.
Well, Gallant's philosophy was he shifted things around quite a bit. Didn't seem to have the same amount of patience with lines that Peter has. Now, Peter will mess with lines. We saw that certainly in the second half of the season. And when they need a goal, he's got no problem double shifting a Panarin. But to find that consistency with Trocheck, Lafreniere, and Panarin just livened up Lafreniere. I mean, he had a career year, and I thought he had a chance at 30 goals. He finished with 28. Just a tremendous season for him, and also a tremendous season for Kakko when you consider he missed 33 games. So I think he would have been a 20-plus goal scorer had he not gotten hurt. So I really – that's a astute observation by you. I felt that that Laviolette got the most out of Lafreniere and Kakko. And going into the season, I felt that the Rangers were going to go as far as their kids would take them. I mean, you know what Zibanejad and Kreider are. You know what Panarin is, even though Panarin was way better than I think anybody anticipated. But what would Hedl do? What would Kakko do? What would Lafreniere do? What would Miller do? And obviously we saw what happened with Hedl. It'd be great if they can get him back in the postseason, but you really saw Kakko and especially Lafreniere grow. So I give Peter Laviolette a ton of credit for that.
And speaking of Lafreniere, I remember last offseason you were talking about, you said you didn't see him as a top six forward, and you weren't necessarily saying, oh, let's trade Lafreniere. You were just saying if a team offers like a reasonable deal to Chris Drury, the Rangers might consider it. But has this season changed your opinion, or do you need to see more from him?
Well, I mean, listen, I wouldn't trade him now. That's for sure. Cause I think he can be even better. I think he could be a perennial 30 goal scorer. Look how long it took for Kreider to become a 40 goal scorer. Now I'm not saying that Lafreniere is going to be a 40, 50 goal scorer, but can I see 28 goals become 35, high 30s, maybe 40 at some point? Absolutely. For sure. He's got the skills. The other thing I always said about him is don't look at him as a first overall pick, and then you're going to be disappointed. There were comparisons to Stamkos when he first came into the league. I don't know if it'll ever reach that, but he's a player I'm sure they love having. And I give Trocheck a ton of credit. I mean, Trocheck, I was kind of leery. Would he work with Panarin when they got him? Because Strom and Panarin were so good together. And now you've seen in the second year that Trocheck has become a star, and he's, I think, directly responsible for Panarin and Lafreniere having career years. So give Trocheck a ton of credit too. So I can't wait to see the growth of Lafreniere. So when I looked at the Rangers, I said, do they need any more, and what's a movable piece? And Lafreniere and Kakko were certainly guys that, at least going into the season, you said, well, if you're going to make a splash, considering what you might be able to get for those guys, that might be an area where you would have to go. If you wanted to get a stud right winger that they were talking about earlier in the season, but Lafreniere moving to the right solved that problem. And I think Kakko getting healthy certainly has helped tremendously. You kind of forget, God, Blake Wheeler got hurt, and you wondered how they were going to survive. And they've done just fine because those guys have really stepped up. So definitely my feeling on any kind of movement with those two has completely changed.
Mm-hmm. How much of an impact do you think Lafreniere can make in the playoffs, or even Kakko for that matter?
Well, you know, you brought up 5-on-5 play. Yep. They've been one of the best 5-on-5 lines in the league. So if this team is going to win, then I think that line is going to have a tremendous impact, and Lafreniere is going to be a major part of that for sure. Mm-hmm. I think he can handle it. I saw the way he played down the stretch. So I think he Panarin and Trocheck are going to be a vital line to this team moving forward in the postseason.
Mm-hmm. This season, I've noticed that the media, not just you and Dave and the radio, but like the MSG broadcasts, TNT broadcasts have been focused a lot. They've paid a lot of attention to 5-on-5 play this season. Does this mean you're like more invested in analytics, or is this just, you know, you're paying attention to the majority of the game?
No, I'm not
looking
I'm
at
not,
those fancy stats.
It's not about the fancy stats to me. It's about, it's just the reality of they've been basically even, and they've got a top three power play and a top three penalty kill. So the numbers are just jarring. And the reason we call attention to it is it basically cost them the Devils series last year. The power play was on the first two games. They crushed the Devils. When it became more of a 5-on-5 series, the Devils ended up winning, you know, four of the next five games and winning the series. And then going into this year, it was something that I think Dave and I paid a lot of attention to, like, was it going to get better? And there were times that it was still very stagnant. Again, mm-hmm. not awful. What it ended up being, like a plus one or two, I think, overall. I think there were plus one before the Panarin goal on Saturday. So it's probably the numbers are a little bit better after what happened against the Islanders and the Senators to close out the season. But it's jarring, right? This team is dynamic on the power play. This team's penalty kill is shut down, but the majority of the game is played 5-on-5, and that's the way it's going to probably be in the playoffs. It's not going to be a parade to the penalty box, and you saw that in the series last year. So, no, it's not looking at the Corsi or the fancy stats. It's just the reality of 5-on-5. Plus, it was so jarring, Joey, too, to see how long Zibanejad went without a 5-on-5 goal and Kreider going without a 5-on-5 goal. To me, it just jumped out way too. It just seemed too obvious to ignore.
Mm-hmm. I've heard Dave's concerns about like Zibanejad and Kreider. He was saying like when Kako was playing on that line before they traded for Roslovic, he was saying that those two guys need to up their game to make Kako better, not the other way around. Like Kako's making Kreider and Zibanejad better. So do you like how concerned are you with like the way those guys are playing? And have you noticed? I mean, for me, I have, but Zibanejad has like been reluctant to shoot the puck this season. Is that a concern for you moving forward?
Well, 5-on-5, I think he has no problem with it on the power play, but I think sometimes they can be a little too unselfish. Yeah, I do hear a lot in Dave's call, just shoot the puck. Yeah. Because I really do think they genuinely care a lot about each other, and I think that's all well and good, but everybody should play to their strengths, you know, and Zibanejad's strength is shooting the puck, and Kreider's strength is parking out in front. And I think that sometimes skews the 5-on-5 because Kreider gets most of his goals off deflections, and that's a lot easier to do on the power play than it is to do even strength. I wonder if Hedl can play, would there be any appetite to split up Zibanejad and Kreider? I don't know. I mean, you can't do it now, obviously, but if Hedl were to come back and be effective, could that be an option if there are any issues? Because that's a pairing that has stayed together all year, right? They've had a multitude of right wingers on that line, but they've never, and you're not going to obviously do anything with a Trocheck line. So I don't think they want to drop Zibanejad to a third line center. And certainly Hedl, we got to see what he can do when he comes back. But I wonder if Hedl gets back to 100%. Is that something they could do if they continue to struggle 5-on-5? But, it's a concern, but I still think they can live with it. Yeah, they won the President's Trophy for God's sake. So I feel like we nitpick this team because the expectations are so high and we watch them every single day, but every team's got some sort of a flaw, and as good as Florida is, as good as Carolina is, if you watch them every day, I'm sure there's concerns there too. So it was just so jarring, but they've certainly found a way to survive it.
Yeah, we were talking about how you were saying that the Rangers 5-on-5 is like pretty much even at the end of the regular season. How much better do you see that, like, do the Rangers need to be to play 5-on-5 to make a deep playoff run? Is it a lot that – is it like they have to start, like, upping the differential by, like, 5? Or is this, like, multiplying it by 5? Or is this, like, you know, just a good stretch here of a few games or like 7 games, something like that, where they could, you know, just go on a hot streak. And
well,
because I mean, it's 16 wins you have to get in the playoffs.
Well, obviously, you're looking at, you know, can they beat Washington? Yeah. But then you're looking at Carolina, possibly. Look how good Carolina. I think Carolina is so underrated. They were right on the Rangers' heels all year. And really, the Rangers, to me, I don't know how you feel about it. Maybe I'm biased because I called the game. Rangers won this division because of that 1-0 win a month ago. The Fox goal that went off of a hurricane.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know which game you're talking about.
But that was a war. That was a playoff game, and the Rangers found a way to win it 1-0. So once you get to the second round, and then if you're going to play Florida or Boston in the conference final, yeah, 5-on-5 play, those are disciplined teams. The deeper you get into the playoffs, I don't think you're going to be as reliant on the power play. You know, we saw Boston a decade ago win the Stanley Cup with like barely scoring any power play goals. You got to be good 5-on-5. And I think they will get better. They're just too talented to do that. I think the regular season sometimes messes with stats because you play different teams every night and the objectives are different. Now you're playing the same team every other day.
Yep. And scheduling too.
And it's just, I think they'll be better at it. You know, and the other thing, too, I think what skews it is that they're just so good on the power play and have been all year, and it's really carried them when you think of all the times because they do give up the first goal a lot. And there was a stretch there, the Florida game, and there was another game where they were down 2-0, and it was the same thing. They used the power play goal as the catalyst to come back. You know, so the power play has just been such a theme for this team that sometimes I make it. It's so good that it kind of dwarfs what they do 5-on-5. So I do think it will be better because you're not getting, I don't think anyway, you're going to get a lot of like 5 and 6 power play opportunities in the postseason the way you can in the regular season.
I think that second game you were referring to is the one against Philly at the Garden. That's the one where it was third period. There was so many goals and it was like 2-1 heading into it, but it ended up 6-5 Rangers and at the end of overtime.
No, that's right. I called that both of those games, and it's like, you know, that they get on the power play, just it's so magical at times. It can just change everything. And I think Fox had goals on both of those and kind of changes things around. I know he did definitely in the Florida game, and that just kind of gets things going.
Yeah, I think he had the OT winner against Philly.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was talking about last week on the show was how like the Rangers get the power plays. So there's a lot of people when they look at 5-on-5 play and like how the Rangers are, you know, even or neutral and not as good as other top contenders, they'll it's almost like they dismiss their ability to score on the power play. But I'm looking at it as, you know, they're drawing a lot of these penalties. It's not like the referees are gifting them. Sometimes, like maybe that game against Philly, the second one where Philly won, I think it was 4-1. Where they were gifted. There was a couple soft calls that in my opinion, but then that game against the Islanders where they went down 3-0, that second period, they really, really dominated play in their end. Do you see it that way as well? Like, you know, drawing penalties, where you're working really hard at 5-on-5, even though you're not getting the goal, you're changing momentum.
It's a great point because I remember in years past, especially last year, it felt like there would be a lot of games where they would get no power play opportunities or one power play opportunity. And I kind of liken it to basketball where, you know, if you drive to the basket, you're going to draw fouls. If you're aggressive offensively, you're going to get to the line. If you're aggressive offensively in the NHL, you're going to get power play. So that's a great point too. You know, 5-on-5 maybe didn't result in a lot of goals, but what it did result in is a lot of power play opportunities because of how good they were. A lot more odd man rushes, a lot more time in the zone. They do have a tendency, you know, Dave jokes during the broadcast, you probably heard it, where it's like, all right, cue up Sweet Georgia Brown. Like they become the Harlem Globetrotters or hockey where they're passing the puck around. They're spending a lot of time in the zone, but they're not necessarily getting opportunities. But the reason I bring it up is it just shows you how highly skilled they are. And by doing that and spending time in the zone, well, what happens? They can't get a change. So it's either going to result or a goal or a penalty. So that's happened a lot where you just see the other teams drained because they can't make changes because they're stuck in their own zone. And then shifts go to 2 minutes and they take advantage of it. Maybe not scoring, but isn't it the same as scoring 5-on-5 as it is because you spend so much time in the zone, right? Even strength, you drew a power play and then you score on the power play that came as a direct result of your 5-on-5 play. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think sometimes the numbers get really skewed.
Boy, I would have loved to hear what Dave had to say when the Rangers played the Islanders at UBS when the goalie, I think it was Varlamov, he lost his stick, but the Rangers were on a power play and they didn't shoot the puck the entire time. I would have loved to hear that.
Well, Dave was screaming a bunch during that game, especially on the Dobson non-call on the cross-check from Trocheck. And then there was, I think Varlamov had an interference they didn't call. It might have even been on when he lost the stick. I think he grabbed the Rangers. Like, how is that an interference? That's why if you listen to the K show and they kind of bust chops about the steppage, I love it because it tells me, it shows me how passionate he is, how into the game he is, and also how in tune he is. I joke about it all the time. I don't know if you notice. If Dave goes, uh-oh, something bad's going to happen. So I want that as a listener. Like, he just said, uh-oh, and then, you know, it'll be me or Kenny or Alex or somebody. All of a sudden, 2-on-1 for the Hurricanes, like, because he goes, uh-oh, that he's not saying it for any other reason, but something bad is about to happen, and something that bad usually does happen, and you got to get bailed out by the goaltender or whatever, or the missed opportunity. But that's why I love Dave. He's so great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like that. I like when you have a guy that's for that team. Like, I know you're supposed to be unbiased and neutral and in sports media, but having that for your team, like, and either for the radio or for TV, I love it. I think it meshes well with fans. And then, that's what we're here for. We're watching our favorite team.
Well, you're playing to the room, right? I mean, if you're listening to a Ranger game, in more all likelihood, you're probably a Ranger fan. But many times I'll hear, oh, well, we caught a break there. That was kind of a soft call, you know, but we'll take it. You know, that's part of it. You know, the great how animated he is too. Listen, he played for this team. He bled for this team. So, and I think the fans really appreciate that.
Yep. He was the captain. Yeah. So that's, like you said, he's a Ranger like through and through. Moving. One of the things that I found interesting was Peter Laviolette broke up the Jacob Trouba, Keandre Miller pairing, but he did it like pretty late into the season. He made it seem like this was not going to happen. He was going to roll with the pairs that got him there. But since Trouba's returned from injury, it's been, that pair has been pretty bad. Like, they've turned the puck over a lot. Miller doesn't look like he's communicating well with Trouba. At least not as well as he was with Schneider. So how do you feel about Laviolette breaking up that pair?
Well, you know, you can look at it as a demotion for Trouba, but you can also look at it as, I mean, Braden Schneider deserved more minutes. He just did. When, you know, this team was 11-1 when Trouba was out with the injury. And I think of that and the 2-game suspension, like, so they were terrific because Braden Schneider played so well with Miller. Mm-hmm. So you can look at it and go, well, you know, Trouba needed to get demoted and play with Gustafson. But I think that pairing was really good. And listen, Jacob Trouba's at the stage of his career where he's a hitter. He's got a shot, but, you know, he sometimes makes mistakes or can get beaten in a big spot. So I think Peter gave him enough leash, but at some point you just say, I think the team's better with Schneider and Miller together. But I also know that Trouba and Miller played very well for long stretches of times as well. So I do think sometimes the fans are unfair to Trouba, but I think he waited as long as he did because I think he just realized that Schneider's just better with Miller and better to get the more minutes and the better look. So we'll see how it goes as the playoffs go. But I think it's more of a promotion for Braden. He deserved it. He's been terrific.
Yeah, he has been really good. The shorthanded goal on, what was it, Saturday against the Islanders, that he stepped up into the play. That was terrific. Unbelievable. Really, really nicely done there.
And he got that opportunity because Miller didn't play, and he's taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or because Trouba didn't play, he took advantage of it.
Yep. Do you think Zach Jones should get a look in the playoffs? I was going off last week about my opinion on Erik Gustafsson. I mean, he's been good for most of the season. He's brought solid offense to the Rangers, and he's been probably their best sixth defenseman in a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back, you look, we had Nemeth, Tenorti, Libor Hájek, Ben Harper. Erik Gustafsson blows those guys out of the water, but do you think Zach Jones could get a look in over him in the playoffs?
No, I think that's the possibility. You know, if Gustafsson struggles at all, that could be a pairing. Jones deserves it. I really think he played well. He's got a sneaky good offensive game. He doesn't panic with the puck at all, but not a ton of experience, obviously, in the postseason. So I'm sure that's something that Laviolette's going to look at. But I think he's ready to jump in. Ruedel, the same thing. The problem is, you know, Ruedel just kind of doesn't have a position when everybody's healthy. But I could see that if Gustafson were to struggle, then I think Jones would definitely get a chance. You're going to need 7-8 defensemen if you're going to make a long playoff run. I'm telling you, guys get hurt. Guys get suspended.
It happens.
So I thought those were great moves by Chris Drury to bring in a Ruedel. And just like I thought it was, you know, good that he was able to make the moves that he made last year too, to get stronger on that blue line. You definitely need to make that when he brought in Ricola. It's something that you got to do. You got to have, I was talking to Brian Boyle about it when he was doing one of the games on TV, that you need 7-8 defensemen in the playoffs. So to know that you have Jones and Ruedel ready to jump in if you need to is really good. And I think Jones will get an opportunity if this is a long playoff run.
Yeah, Boyle has spoken pretty highly about Ruedel because he played with him. They were teammates in Pittsburgh. And coincidentally, Brian Boyle is my next person I'm trying to get on the show here.
Okay.
So it's funny that you brought that up. But I want to go back. So like 10 years ago or 9 years ago, even when the Rangers played the Capitals in that second round series in 2015, the Rangers had Dan Boyle. And Alain Vigneault constantly matched him up against Alex Ovechkin. I don't know why he did that, but Alex Ovechkin like took him out to lunch like that. He absolutely dominated in that series. Like, he was great. I'm hoping that the same thing doesn't happen with like Gustafson and Trouba with the third pair. Do you think that's a possibility that we see, you know, Laviolette roll out that third pair? Or is he going to try and match up Fox to Ovechkin as much as possible?
I don't know. We'll see. I know they did that a lot. You know, I remember calling. I would always be the third announcer for those playoff games at ice level, and, you know, Stahl and Kreider, Stahl and Girardi, you know, trying to shut down Ovechkin. We'll see how the matchups go. I mean, they play a system that kind of tries to slow you down altogether anyway. So, and then obviously, what can you do once the series hits Washington and you don't have that last change? So I think everybody's going to be up for the battle. Ovechkin's been unreal here down the stretch. What did he have, 8 goals in the first 43 games? He ended up finishing with 31, and he had the big goal last night to get the Capitals in. So, but I don't, at this stage of his career, I think it's mostly power play. It's mostly just those, you know, shots from the circle. So we'll see how Peter decides to lay it out there. I think he has faith in all three to get it. But it really depends on, well, do you need goals? But I just like Fox and Lindgren, because I just think Lindgren in a big spot is going to do what he's got to do. But I think Peter could probably have faith, now that he's got Schneider with Miller, that he can have faith in at least the top four doing the job on Ovechkin. You still have Oshie, who's been kind of a Ranger killer in his career. He's had some big games against them. But I even though they split the four games, I do like this matchup against Washington, and you hope that it's a short series, because these long series early on are what kills you later on if you really want to make a run. So even when they went in 14, you know, going 7 against Washington, going 7 against Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, like, it just kills you. So hopefully, I respect Washington. I just hope that this is not a series that is a tension convention that goes 7, because I think it just hurt them down the road.
Yeah, the Rangers have been notorious for doing that in the playoffs, going 6 or 7, like almost every series.
And no disrespect to the Islanders. The Islanders are built for the postseason. I just don't like their matchup against Carolina. I just have a lot of respect for Carolina. If Carolina makes short work of the Islanders, which they certainly can, do you want to give Carolina in that second round series, you know, where you play 2 or 3 extra games than they did going in? Listen, everything doesn't matter in the first round. They're going to get almost a week off. But, you know, jumping into that second round series, you want every advantage if it ends up being Carolina.
Right. And speaking on this Rangers-Capitals matchup, what do you think might give the Rangers the most trouble in this series, if anything at all? I know you said they match up well, but what could be, like, something big that the Capitals have?
you know, Wilson's always an X factor, right? I mean, he's a troublemaker. It'll be interesting to see how they use Rempe in this series, because Wilson's not a fighter, but he's an agitator, and you don't want the games to get away from you, right? The Washington's an underdog. They're going to do everything. They're going to pull out all the stops. You know, Tom Wilson he's one of those guys you'd love to have on your team, but you hate him that he's not on your mm-hmm. team. So you just don't want him to, you just don't want it to become the circus. And I love Rempe, but what happened with the Devils and stuff, you don't need that in the playoffs. All right. You don't need stupid things to happen. Getting guys suspended. Washington's the underdog. They're going to try to stir the pot. Don't get caught up in that, because Tom Wilson can do that to you. So hopefully they're disciplined enough to stay out of, you know, bad penalties and bad situations that are going to get created by him. And I like Charlie Lindgren, and that's an interesting little subplot.
Yeah. The
brothers going up against each other, but you know, he can get hot. He was good. He was good last night. He was good down. Didn't face a ton of shots against Boston, but he was good in that shutout victory back on Monday. So those are the two things. A hot goaltender can, you know, drive you crazy. We've seen that happen going back to Ben Bishop in that conference final against Tampa. So those are the things that you worry about. And of course, you know, Ovechkin can get hot. He's really carried them in the month of March. Let's face it, Washington's here because of how great they were in March. Every other, you know, they got a minus 37 goal differential. It's incredible. It was a snail's race to who was going to get that 8 seed. That's why the Islanders won the 3, because they got hot. Everybody else was kind of just ordinary. So if the Rangers take care of business, they should be okay.
Mm-hmm. If you have a prediction for this series?
It's, you know, listen, it's Washington. It's, you know, you look at the regular season. I'm going to pick the Rangers in 6. I'd want to say 5, but I just have a feeling that it's just going to be a peskier series. Washington's been kind of a house of horrors, even going back to last year. I remember doing a game in Washington and the Caps were out of it. You might remember this. I think it was like in April and the Caps were out of it. And I was talking to their announcers and they're like, "Oh, you're going to kill us today, man. It's just that we're awful." And then I think the Rangers ended up losing that game 6-3. Like, Washington's been a bit of a pain.
I think I remember
that
was
a Saturday afternoon game late in the season.
Yeah. They were like resting guys because they're trying to get Kane. I think the Rangers were doing, they were doing those captioning and things.
And it was just, so, you know, that's kind of a crazy. So I'm going to pick the Rangers in 6. I don't think it's going to get that sweaty. It could be, you know, you're up 3-1, you lose a game 5 or something, but I'm going to go Rangers in 6. How about mm-hmm. you?
I'll say Rangers in 5. I think that's what the rain. I'll give Washington and Ovechkin the respect there to get a game. But I mean, this is like the expectation is pretty high for the Rangers. Like, they have to come through here and you know, they can't make it a 7-game series. This is not like, you never know though. You never know though. You know, the playoffs, the teams can catch lightning in a bottle.
Like, well, listen,
last year Florida did that. We've seen it plenty of times years before. I think Montreal, like in 2021, in the bubble year.
In the bubble, yeah. I will say about the Panthers thing last year, and not to take Boston off the hook, but we saw them win the President's Trophy the year before. Yeah. And you see what Florida's doing now. So maybe Florida wasn't actually your traditional 8 seed. You know, maybe they were actually a lot better than we gave them credit for, and certainly going all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And what they've been able to do this year, there was no fluke. I remember when I was in Ottawa a couple of months, I guess it was late January, I had a Ranger-Senator game and talking to the guys down there, and Jacques Martin, you know, is the coach. And we missed it. He was an assistant coach with the Rangers in the bubble, but we didn't get a chance to see anybody. So we got to talking to him, and he said before he took the Senator's job, he was in Florida last year, and he's like, it just took Paul Maurice a little bit of time to get his message across. But once he did, it all seemed to click in. So it's possible that Florida team was a lot better than we give them credit for. So not to give Boston a break, but maybe they took on a team that was a lot better than people thought.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see that in Washington, but we've seen 8 seeds beat 1 seeds before. So you've got to give them a lot of respect. They're well coached. And they've got a good goaltender. They've got Ovechkin. They've got Oshie. Carlson's a good player. So you got to mind your P's and Q's for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, a couple last questions, couple last things before we wrap it up. Rempe and Wilson, you don't think that they're going to fight, or do you think that might happen?
Well, Wilson's just not – he's not really much of a fighter, right? I could see somebody having to fight because of something he does. But, again, I like Rempe. I love what's happening here. You just don't want it to become a circus, mm-hmm. right? And he's still young, and – I thought Dave was very poignant when he said, you know, we want to see if this guy can play well enough to be in the postseason. And I think he's kind of proven that he can. But when you saw what happened with the Siegenthaler hit, I disagree with Peter Laviolette. Where he's like, he was bracing himself to hit the board. I think he got carried away. And then you got the line brawls and stuff. And listen, I've seen this with Washington before, and I've seen it with Tom Wilson before. And I just don't want, you know, this isn't Ryan Reeves, who's an experienced guy that kind of knows. This is still a young guy. So you just don't want a veteran Washington team to pick at a scab at something that ends up causing more trouble than it's worth. So
I got you.
Play your game. Don't get caught up into that. And let's face it, if they ever got squared up, Rempe would take care of them. So ultimately, that's why you probably want to dress them, just so nothing will happen. But something about the Rangers and Tom Wilson's. There will be something in this series that'll be discussed. Something that he'll do, something that he'll claim is done to him, and you just got to be above that. You got bigger fish to fry, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would work in their favor. I feel like if it's, you know, that's Wilson getting under the Rangers' skin. You don't want to give them an advantage.
The series, nobody's picking them to win the series. They're shocked to be in the playoffs to begin with, right? So what do they got to lose? Nobody's expecting anything from them. Mm-hmm. So anything positive they can gain from it, they're going to try.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Hedl's going to actually come back and play? And if so, where do you think he slots into the lineup?
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You still have a long way to go. He has not played, and he did have the setback back in January. I'm going to say no for this series. And then maybe if they get to the second round, things can open up. I could probably see him with Kako and Cooley and moving Wennberg to the fourth line. I think that would round out the centers very well. That's probably where I would put him. I think that's how it works, but it's quite the jump to go from not playing into the postseason. He's wearing a non-contact jersey, so that bodes well. But if it happens in the first round, I think it'll be late. I don't think we'll see him on Sunday. But, you know, talking to people, it seems like it would be quite the leap. But I'm not going to rule out that possibility. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, it was just really, really shocking to see that he was at practice all of a sudden in the one day. I think the day before the reporters saw him at practice, Vince Mercogliano commented and said they made a spot for Hedl in the locker room. And
right.
Then the next day, he showed up at practice wearing, I think he was like just a regular jersey. I don't even think it was like the red non-contact.
No, it was right in.
He was right in there. That's why I was like, okay, he might actually play, but just not in the regular season. So I'm not sure. I know you said before about maybe you tweak like line one, line three. Could we see like maybe Cooley on the first line and then Kreider with Hedl on the third line, split it up that way?
I just think it just opens up the possibility, right? If things don't go well, but you know, hopefully they go well and you don't have to worry about it, but we'll see. That'll be a nice little piece to add for sure if they're able to get him back in some capacity, you know, because that would make a pretty, pretty deep center pool, right? Because then, you know, obviously you move Barkley Goodrow to wing, but you know he can play center. He can win faceoffs for you. So it's a nice, it'd be a nice problem to have if he's able to come back.
Mm-hmm. Hedl can also play the wing. He's it's been a little while, but he's pretty good. Yeah. He was pretty good at playing the wing, and people seem to forget that.
No, for sure.
Yeah. The last thing I have here, and I'm mad at myself because I didn't cue you in on this in the very beginning before we started recording, but on the show we have something called the Ice Cold Take segment. And it's kind of like Point God on the K show.
Okay. All right.
So the Ice Cold Take, based on the name of the show, it's, we call it an accurate statement backed by facts and observations that is solid in nature, similar to a block of ice. It's a spot on claim. Okay. So do you have an ice cold take related to the Rangers? This is on the spot. This is like Point God on the spot. Like, not just, you know, Anthony's going to go back and pick it out like from the first 2 hours of the show. This is like right here, right now.
So it's just an ice cold take that's like factual.
Yeah. So something, it's almost like a hot take, but you're fairly confident that this is going to be right.
I'm fairly confident that Panarin is going to continue what he did in the regular season in the postseason.
Okay.
He's due. And I think that Panarin is, if this team makes a run, that Panarin will be a Conn Smythe Trophy candidate. This is not going to be where's Panarin. I think he is going to be the catalyst to a cup run.
I like that. I like that. That's good because it's controversial, because last season it was like, all right, where's Panarin? Where's Panarin? I want this guy gone. In the offseason, people were saying, trade this guy. Don't want him on the team anymore. And he shaves his head 120 points later, and here we are.
President, I just think I have that whole line is just clicking too much. It's going to be so important that I think he's going to have a monster postseason.
Mm-hmm. I said it yesterday. I'm going to go with it again. I said Alexi Lafreniere is going to be the X factor for the Rangers in the playoffs. I mean, because it seemed like Panarin turned the puck over a little too much last postseason, and he didn't have enough time and space, and he wasn't able to work with that. I think what Panarin could do, if it does come to that, is he could defer to Lafreniere. And Lafreniere has been a really good puck handler, and he could hold his own in the offensive zone. And he's makes zone entries himself. Like, he has no problem either getting the puck in deep or carrying it over the blue line. He doesn't seem to have any issue whatsoever, and he's playing pretty confidently this season. So I look at Lafreniere and say he's an X factor there.
We're kind of saying the same thing, because I would think that if Lafreniere is going to be an X factor, then Panarin's going to get a ton of points through that, and vice versa. So that line's going to be very, very big for them. And I just don't see how they can have success without that line having success. And I think he's the best player on that line. And the reason that it's so controversial is that's the thing, is can he be, outside of the overtime goal in Game 7 against Pittsburgh, you know, what's been his special moment? And I think this could be it. Because really, nobody's going to remember this season. Like, it's kind of like the Jágr season, right? The Jágr, 123 points in 05-06. He got swept by the Devils in the first round, and he hurt his shoulder. You don't want it to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
This could end up being the greatest single season a Ranger has ever had. I don't know how fondly we'll remember Panarin's 120-point, 48-goal season if you get bounced in the first round and he's got no points. So I think he's going to follow it up.
Mm-hmm. I think the only way around that, if Panarin doesn't, you know, step up, is if Zibanejad and Kreider carry the Rangers. Or maybe Shesterkin, because you know how a goaltender.
Well, that's another. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that a goaltender stole a series. And you know, we didn't even talk about him. Like, and you know, he had a really bad January, but he made up for it, and he ended up having a phenomenal season, and all these things going for the Rangers, and they still have one of the best goaltenders in the league. Mm-hmm. So that bodes well for them moving forward too.
Yeah. How about that game on Saturday against the Islanders? He was
great.
Fantastic.
He really was. I can't fault him on any of the goals against the Islanders on Tuesday. And I thought he was terrific and made sure that it stayed 3-0 and not 4-5-0. So I thought he had a very underrated game last Tuesday in the 4-2 loss. Yeah. Because I think the only reason they were even in a position to come back is some of the saves that he was able to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you talked to EJ Raddick about it too, but like the I don't know if you talked to him this week. I don't think you
No, he's blew us off the last couple of weeks. He's been busy.
But I know he played goalie. How does he – do you know how he feels about, you know, Shesterkin flashing the leather and being all, you know, like – I don't even know how to describe it. How, like, Makar described – you remember how Makar described he was flashing the leather that one time? I think it was last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'd have to ask him. I'm not sure. He hasn't told me. It hasn't come up. I'll have to ask him on Monday.
Maybe if it wasn't, he probably hasn't. I don't know. If he hasn't chimed in, then maybe he doesn't think it's that big of a deal. I know Islanders fans and Devils fans were complaining about that. I don't know. I don't think it matters.
Richter used to do that. I mean, and you can't find a nicer guy than that. So
yeah,
I think he's got a little show off in him. So what?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's part of his personality, though.
Yes, I agree.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for joining the show. Appreciate you doing this on such short notice. I know we've been trying to work this out for a few weeks
just
now.
It gets busy, but I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, I know. I understand. And before the playoffs, like, I knew this was the best time possible. I didn't want to, you know, message you while you're going back and forth between Washington and New York.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So I'm glad we were able to wrap this up here.
You got it, buddy.
Hey, Rangers fans. Thank you so much for listening to the Ice Cold Takes podcast this week. Make sure you follow at Ice Cold Takes Pod on Twitter to stay up to date with the latest Rangers info. See you all next week.
Time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know.